podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey everybody, welcome to Coach Unplugged. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. You know, their customer service, even before they were sponsors, was unbelievable. It's one of the reasons I reached out to them and said, I want you to be one of our sponsors on our podcast, because I just believe in their machine so much, and it's just helped our team win so many games. So mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It is the one-stop shop. It is my baby. It's one of the reasons we're able to keep this free. We're not going to be charging for our podcast or our YouTube channel or anything like that. But it's also run by a high school coach for high school coaches or youth coaches or even college coaches. It's not run by a college. It's not Zoom. It's not all these Zoom calls. It's on court. It's demonstrations. It's videos. It's clinics. It's handouts. It's everything you need to become a better basketball coach in one-stop shop. So if it's not there, I will find it for you. All right, let's head off to the podcast.
All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. All right, so Coach, I've been wanting to have you on for a really long time. I think last year somehow we were trying to get on, but something didn't happen, and I don't know. I probably got fishing or started doing something and didn't do as many. And a world pandemic allows you to have more time. It's amazing, isn't how that works. So Tim, I'm gonna have you introduce yourself, kind of tell your basketball journey. The way I describe this to guests is just, I think everybody has a different journey in life. And I think I think the listeners always love hearing kind of people's story. And then we're going to dive into kind of building a program. Kind of like we said before we came on air here, I think there's a lot of similarities in kind of our best, definitely in our basketball journey. And then we'll dive from there. So go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners, and then just kind of tell them a little bit about you and your journey, your basketball journey, your life journey, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Go ahead. All yours.
Yeah. So I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. You know, I was one of those kids that, you know, played basketball, baseball, football, you know, really enjoyed all the sports. We played a lot of basketball as kids. You know, I think that's the days, you know, you had your Loyola Marymounts and your UNLVs and trying to emulate all those kind of teams. When you're playing out in the playgrounds and things like that. So I did a lot of that, played a ton in college. And when I got my first teaching position, which was in Iowa just switched from 6-on-6 to 5-on-5 girls basketball. And this was in 1993. So the school that hired me said, we need a girls basketball coach. And I was like, yeah, I could probably do it.
So Iowa was 3-on-3 offense and 3-on-3 defense in that
Correct.
Point?
Yes. And my wife's from Iowa, and she played on one of those teams. She can only dribble twice. Couldn't steal the ball from anybody out of the lane. This was 92 was the last year that they did that.
I know. I tell my players that, and they look at me like I'm from Mars. I said, YouTube it. It's like, it's crazy. Like, they go, that didn't happen in the 90s. I go, well, yeah,
it did. Yeah. I mean, I went to Creighton, and we had some really good offensive, but there were some amazing players. Coaches really liked it a lot, from what I understand. How the game went.
Well, the one thing I could think that would make it would be intriguing to play it on both sides, like if boys play it too. What is intriguing about that 3-on-3 is I coached boys volleyball for 7 years. I don't know if you knew that. I just gave it up, so I'm not coaching this fall. I don't know what I was thinking. Literally don't know what I was thinking. Like 7 years of doing volleyball, then 2 weeks, then basketball. And I'm still married, which is amazing. What's unique about it is I think kids could specialize a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like I could always find a spot on a volleyball court for at least boys for a boy that was good at something. Like if you could play defense, you could play libero. You could be in the back. If you were tall and could block, I could find a spot in the front for you. Like that would be the one unique thing I think for some basketball programs is, you know, if you had a great offensive player and they couldn't play a lick of defense, you could find a spot for him on that 3-on-3. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, it was like my wife always joked because she was a defensive player, and whenever the coach got mad at him, he'd make her shoot free throws during practice because that's something she never worked on. at all. So she always laughed about that.
But, oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had never seen it before, so it was really – the kids would try to explain it to me. It's like, we're trying to get ready for play 5-on-5 because it was at first year, everybody just played 2-3 zone except for us because I was a Dick Bennett disciple as far as defense went.
But, right.
It was just everybody's just like, let's see if anybody can make any shots because half these kids have never shot before.
Oh, God, I never thought about that. Yeah. So you were in a very unique world then, like, because especially with them just starting. God, you could almost write a book on that. Like,
yeah, it was I think the thing that, like I said, being young and, you know, kind of growing up in these, you know, up-tempo basketballs and seeing all everything on ESPN, you know, you think you know everything and you realize you know nothing. And we struggled the first year. It took us a long time. And, you know, being a young 23-year-old coach already coaching a varsity team is pretty crazy in itself.
Right.
But we had a really good boys coach named Bruce Trubick, whose son played in Nebraska for Danny Nee during that time. And after my first year, he's like, Tim, why don't you come to some clinics with me? And I was like, they do this? He's like, oh, yeah, right. They'll come. They'll talk basketball. And I had no idea. I thought everything was a big secret, you know, and that nobody was willing to share anything. And after that, I was just hooked into coaching basketball. That I realized right. You could ask coaches questions and people, you know, you could actually have talks about basketball.
I think I know less than I did 30 years ago. Don't you think that? I think youth is wasted on me. I think when I was 25 or 28 and a coach, I knew everything. Like
exactly. Yeah, I agree. Sometimes you're like, I don't know what the heck we're doing.
So. Right, right. I think that's so true. All right, so how long did you stay there?
I was there for 2 years. Like I said, grew up in Wisconsin, moved back with my wife, Carla, who's an attorney here now in Beaver Dam. But we met out there at Creighton. So she'd finished up with law school and wanted to take the bar one time. So we came back to Wisconsin and we got kind of drew a triangle between Madison, Milwaukee, and Green Bay and ended up in this area. I ended up at Houstonsford for 7 years. Had a great time there. Great, great school, Division V school. Had a lot of success there. 4 conference championships. Could never get past Randolph or some of those teams at that time that were
right. Really
good. But had a lot of fun. Kind of realized that smaller schools may be struggling at some time. As I'm a math teacher as well, so I kind of wanted to make sure I was in a position that I wouldn't have to worry about that. So I kind of came over to Beaver Dam, which is about 20 minutes from there, and waited 3 years for Jim Fisher, who coached here for 28 years. And then I got the head job here in 2005.
Okay, yeah, so 2005. So, yeah, being a math teacher, and I think there's a lot of – we've had a lot of head coaches in our math department. I don't know if there's something about math teachers and FIED teachers, but I think that – I don't know. It's interesting.
One thing that's nice is you try to be analytical.
Yeah.
To be objective about things, and everything's number-driven.
Yeah.
Anybody asks you a question, it's like – this is the numbers.
Well, you should be a stat. You should be a stats teacher. I teach statistics all day. So
I coach golf as well, which is great because it's like, hey, it's your score. Nobody ever argues about golf because it's like your score. The best players play because of their scores.
Right. That's what I always said. I said, I can always retire and become a swim coach. It's like, you know, boop, you're faster, you get to go. You know, I mean, mom and dad aren't calling you Friday night after the game and saying, why isn't Johnny playing more? You know, yeah.
Yeah, I can never – I have never had that. I've coached golf for quite a few years. I don't ever remember having anybody say, well, no, they didn't get to play. Why didn't they get to play? You know, kind of thing. So.
And I've won a lot of games. I can tell you, when you do win, the phone doesn't ring as much.
I've had some very interesting, like, you know, 23-3 season. If you play this kid more, you guys would be really good, you know, kind of things like that. So it's
I got a story for you. You'll love this one. I had a parent, a mom call me when we used to play 3 games, which we won't get started on the WIA and why they got rid of Division I games because we don't have enough time, 8 Division I teams at the state tournament because I don't have enough time. But anyway, I don't remember.
Come on for another segment for that one because I agree.
Oh my God. I think they should be 3 divisions of 8.
Yes,
that's my. That's what I think it should be. More kids will get to play. Yep. My big issue, and I don't know, they don't do it up at the Rush, I don't think either, but were you over there when they had the shoot around before the games?
When we made it to state in 2010, that was probably the highlight. We got beat right away first game that year. That was probably the highlight, seeing all the different schools there for the shoot-arounds. It was awesome.
I just don't know why they got – I mean,
for our kids.
That makes me more mad. I can live with the eight teams, the same amount of teams every division. I can live with that. I can't live with something that's not good for kids.
Yeah.
When you got rid of the shoot around, that wasn't good for kids. So what I'm describing to listeners, because we have listeners all around, is they used to spend the entire day before the state tournament with a shoot around where you'd get 20 minutes on the court that you would play on, and it was reverse order. So we tended to be first because we tended to be closest to the arena because we're in Madison and the state tournament's in Madison. Sometimes we were second if Edgewood made it or somebody like that. But and then what we would do is they'd get out of school. It'd be Wednesday. It wouldn't be Thursday. It'd be Wednesday. And then you would do the 20-minute shoot-around, and then we would usually take our guys out to breakfast, and then we'd send them back to school because we want our routine. We'd have our normal practice. I have pictures of my little guy is graduating from high school in a week, and I have pictures of him. I have pictures of my daughter on that court. It is the happiest time you are as a coach. Everyone gets on the floor. Everybody gets that, you know, not every kid gets on that Kohl Center floor, but they do then. And that's why, you know, I'm just, I fought that hard too. I want you to know I was on the executive board. I fought that hard. Like, why are you taking that away?
I think it's a pretty special day for our kids. I mean, it really was. We got there. Cuba City was there. Pius was there. Vincent was there. So we're coming in, and we had not been there, and our kids had never seen it like that. And they were just like, wow, this is unbelievable.
Right, and it's where you can take the pictures, and everyone's happy, and, it's a wonderful time and a wonderful situation at that point. So 2005, okay.
Yeah.
Was it 2005? Yeah, 2005 was the year you got it. So similar to my program, I was the only applicant at Memorial when I took it over. No one else wanted my job. No one else applied. That's how bad it was. So it took some time to kind of turn this thing around.
Yeah, I would say that's true. You're pretty jealous of other coaches who kind of pop in right away and get in there. But, we had a lot of kids that were pretty good athletes, but they just were not basketball players really at all. I saw the potential there with the athleticism, but we needed to, make some changes. I think the one thing is just getting kids to want to compete in basketball. Really good softball programs have been to state during that time, really good volleyball programs, some good track athletes. They had success, but it just was not basketball. And I think a lot of the kids were three-sport athletes, that basketball was number three.
Right.
So, I think one of my first, real challenges is I'm coming from a school of 150 kids, and now I'm coming to a school of 1,200 at that time, and being like, okay, we're going to go do this thing in the summer, and not being able to get any kids to go just because nobody was committed to basketball at that time.
Right. So let's walk. So I coach is one of the winningest coaches in the state of Wisconsin. He's not going to toot his own horn. I will do it. I personally believe he's probably going to break the record that Memorial has. It's probably the one that's the hardest in the state. We had 14 consecutive conference championships, I think. 14 or 15, I don't remember.
It'll be tough.
He's got 11 right now in a row. Three state. I mean, he's going to break that record. I can't imagine he won't. Those are insane. I think your winning percentage is like you're 400 and 163,
with a tough stretch in there though, because
tough stretch. So what I'm trying to get to, and coach and I have very similar, I'm like in the low 400s and the low 100s. So him and I have very similar records. And what I tell people is, first of all, Rome wasn't built in a day. And there's a lot of people behind that record. But what I'm going to have you do is kind of go through what you think some of the keys are to this. And then I'll jump in. I think, like I said, I think we have a lot of similarities. I refer to my, you were 0-21 your first season.
Second season.
We refer to it in our program as the streak. where we beat a team. I won't say which team it was. And then we lost every game that season until we played that team again. We refer to it as a streak. But everybody, I think you got to kind of go through that. Like, I mean, and again, I'm jealous of the people that just stepped in and don't do that. But I think it makes it sweeter for you and I when you have experienced that, because it's really about the kids. It's really about that. And, you know, we both have had really good players too. So,
you're right, because it does really challenge you in so many ways, and you start having a lot of doubt about what you believe in.
And then when you have talent, so I'm going to tell all the people who are listening, when you have talent, then you're only winning because you have talent. Coach is laughing. He's heard the exact same things I've heard for 20 years. It's like, they only win because they're good and they got, I've had NBA guys. Oh, they only won because they had what? It's like, whatever. I mean, you have to become very secure in your own skin if you're going to do this thing. And you won't become as popular. Like when you're 0-21 and you've lost, 14 in a row, you become very popular. People like you a lot better than when you beat them for 14 straight years, kind of thing.
I lost 29 in a row. And like I said, I came from like a pretty successful smaller school program. And I was more trying to build the foundation. I wasn't considering wins and losses. I was like, let's do the right things. Right. And then after we finally broke that 29 game losing streak, I remember the first thing I reported, how does it feel to get the streak over? I didn't even realize we had a streak. I was just trying to, do things the right way. For me, I wasn't focusing on that. I was focusing more on big picture type of thing.
Well, I think it's two things, and I'll have you jump in and you can describe some of the keys, but I think it's part of it is making, like I'm a math teacher. We're both math teachers. So I always make little goals. So my first little goal was to have a winning season because that's how bad they were. My second goal was to beat Janesville Craig. Like, so you can realize that Suter was there. They were the perennial. Like, I set little goals. Next one was I wanted to be in the top three in conference. My first goal was not to win a state championship and be nationally ranked. It was like, I just literally want, I can remember sitting in the shower thinking, God, if we can get two more wins, we'll be above 500. Just thinking like, I wasn't thinking, and that's the problem. I think people don't, you're not going to get in the NBA finals in your first season, probably, kind of thing. It's like, it's baby steps. So I'm going to have you kind of talk through some of what do you think the keys have been in your program. And then when we circle back around, we'll talk about why the WI won't let us play in bigger tournaments than four teams. And anyway, we got lots of things.
Just like what you say, as far as goal, I mean, I came to Beaver Dam, I was hoping to maybe win one conference championship. And maybe get the state. That would have been a thing. And, and that's kind of I look back on my interview as like the vision I had for him is our vision is we want to get the state. That was kind of a thing where, you have to see that big picture and believe you can do it and things like that. And, Jim Valvano always said, you got to have a dream. You can't just, not have a dream. So that was kind of the dream.
And I talked to my guys, I'll sit in our preseason and I'll say, we talk about winning state championships all the time, but I say everybody wants to win. Mm-hmm. No one's going in that one. No goal isn't to win. It's like, how do we get to that step? Like, I think that's super important. All right, go ahead, coach. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, then the vision, as far as that, and then how we're going to do that is just really felt that, and I'd been there for a few years to kind of see it and just getting that competitive nature. It really bothered me. Like, we had, a really good team one of the years I was assistant. And after the first game of the season, in a conference game, and we lose and all the kids are laughing after the game. And that, I take that stuff personally. There's a pride to know what we do and that we want to do well. So that was one thing is getting, that competitive nature in kids. And
How did you do that?
Tried to find the right kids. Felt that year I had a good group of freshmen, which I probably brought a few of them up too early. But they were competitive kids. They were. I mean, looking back on it, I don't know if I would have done it the same way. I might have just played it out with those kids. But being a competitor, and nobody goes into a season saying, gosh, we're going to have a losing season this year.
Right.
You're going to find kids that you want to go in with that are going to compete for you.
I think that's a real – I mean, I don't know if it was Bob Suter, but somebody is like – it's like making soup. You got to find the right mixture of, carrots and you know, stock and all that kind of stuff when you're making your soup. And I love the idea. Like, I always tell people that's one of the most important days of my season is the day I pick my team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's not about, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the kids that were kind of at that first year, it's like, well, why are we not doing well? I'd ask them, you know, try to see what they're saying. Because, you know, sometimes the kids don't have the same, you know, vision or understanding what's going on. They kept on saying, well, we're just missing shots. And it was so much more than that, you know. And that's why I really tried to vision. I tried to instill early was kind of a Bennett style of defense. And, you know, my UNLV kind of had to wait a little bit at that point, you know.
Right.
But just to take care of the basketball and value the basketball and take good shots. So that was a big thing with the vision, I think, you know, just as far as what we wanted to be.
Okay.
As far as a high school program. I think along with that, though, then just at that time in our old coach, Jim Fisher, we were just starting our youth program for boys and girls at that point, our Positively Hoops program. And, you know, I knew we needed basketball, but I didn't quite know what was going to look like as far as that and how we're going to run it. We had a man named Tom Brooks who was really good as far as not the basketball side, but just organizing things and creating kind of a model that would be, you know, going for years. And that model that we started back then, which is probably like 2003, 2004, still goes today and is probably one of the best youth organizations that boys and girls work together and share everything, I believe, in the state and, you know, probably nationwide.
So explain how you explain your youth program.
We have a 3rd through 8 youth program, and you know, both boys and girls, and you know, it's run under one umbrella. We host a couple tournaments. You know, every team is kind of developed on their own. We try very, very hard not to, to have a no cup policy, but it's serious competitive basketball. Both sides. So
right, and then we Marcus and I started. Initially we were separate. I don't remember when, like 10 years ago or 8 years ago, when we came together. But one of the reasons was your program. It's like, well, look what Beaver Dam's doing.
Yeah.
You know, we were trying to on our girls program. We had a good girls team this year. Anybody that saw them, but very talented. But the reason we were able to get Marcus has put a lot of work into that. And part of the reason we were able to get to that point is I think we put us together and put it under one umbrella, you know, had a board, had our athletic director on that board to kind of help move it in the right direction. And it's amazing. It's amazing when both the boys and girls teams are good. It's a special thing in the winter. It really is.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. We had a few years ago, our first trip up to state, the boys lost on a sectional game to Cedarburg when Cedarburg had some of their really good teams with Diener.
Right.
It was just basketball that year. I think there were 2 losses during the regular season that year.
Yeah. They had a really good team that year. I remember that team.
Like, oh, it was awesome. I mean, the gym was packed every night, for both of us. And, you know, and it was nice when they set it up that we had a board. But any basketball decisions were basically at the discretion of the varsity coach.
Okay.
That's how we set that up. And that was a Tom Brooks, and I give him so much credit for setting that up that way, that you didn't have, you know, everybody questioning, well, how come you're doing this? How come you're doing this? And we have discussions about things because issues always come up. But when it comes to specific basketball type of things, the head coach has the final say.
And do you have issues with gym space?
At first we did. It was really – this is one of my funniest lines, because we had an AD at the time that used to tell us the gyms need rest. So it's like,
no.
And it was just like, it was very hard for me at that time, being a new coach. It was my first year. It's like, we just got off of a bad season. It's like, I'm the kind of guy, let's get the gym open up, give kids opportunities. Let's find out who wants to work.
Right.
There was a lot of, we need the gyms to rest. That changed, you know, through some different people. We have a lot of elementary gyms. Our new high school gym is fabulous. Middle school gym is really nice. Unfortunately, somebody drove into it last year, and the gym got flooded when the fire started, and it was a crazy thing. I don't know if you heard about that. So,
no, what happened? Somebody drove into it?
Drove into the middle school like 5 days before school. A huge fire started. The fire department came out, and basically, really nice gym. And for whatever reason, we have our middle school has a college-length floor, which is awesome to both practice on. And even play there. So, but yeah, so that gym was not available through the last half of 2019.
Wow.
Yeah, but then it got back in 2020. We like to get some high school team go up there. As I said, okay. The college length floor is great for conditioning like that. Kids always know what kind of practice they're going
to
have.
That's one of my theories about the game of basketball. I don't think there needs to be a lot of changes, but I think the court is too small. at the high school level. Like with my guys, it should be actually wider. It should be longer, but it should be wider. It's too narrow. Like 84 feet for some of these boys right now is not, it's, oh my God. It's,
you know, watching all the old videos of games, you know, popping up during this time and just understanding how the athletes have changed so much. I mean, I think the skill was always there for a lot of players, but just the athleticism is just amazing.
Right.
Women now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, what you watch like a women's at college and our WNBA game, how they've improved so much. I mean, I look from when I started, I always talk about this because it's always funny going back to my first practice. I'm all excited. First drill, Tammy Lang's going to shoot our first layup of our first drill, who was a defensive player the year before, goes in for a layup, shoots it over the basket. That was my very first drill as a high school basketball coach, and I never forget it because I was like, this is what it's going to be. All right.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I always think about that when I watch like kids that we've had now and going on to play in college and things. It's just like, wow.
So you think building the youth is a huge part of it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you're going to have pockets of teams, I think, always, because you're going to have those few kids that are going to be really good.
Yep.
But it's going to keep it going together. I think
it makes it a so here's what I tell young coaches when they ask. I said, you're right. You know, everybody will have that team that will be really good. Yeah. And then you'll have, you know, if you coach for 30 years, you're going to have a couple stretches where you get a couple groups of kids and you're going to be able to make a run at the thing. Probably if you're, you know, but to consistently win over time, you got to have a youth program. Because it's your AAA, it's your feeder. You know, I you know, watching your program from afar, that's what impresses me so much, is it's not one season after another, it's season after season after season after season of them being competitive, and you winning. What I tell people is we had turned the corner when at some point everyone during our heyday, during that entire stretch, at some point we were everybody in the conference was competing with us. Okay. You know what I mean? They had their little run and they were like, whoa.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, I think that's a hats off to you, because I think probably that youth program looking back is one of the turning points for your, you know, it took some while to reap the benefits. Right. From it,
yeah. But I mean, we tried to model after, I mean, you look at good programs when you're starting things. I think you look at what are good programs doing, what we're going to model. At that time, we really liked what Kimberly was doing.
Yeah.
West was having a lot of success. Columbus was right down the road from us. And that's hard when you got a school that's 20 minutes from you, is a lot smaller than half the size. You're probably a third of the size of your school.
Right. Just
beating us time after time after time after time.
Right.
And that's hard for, you know, to kind of accept that when that's going on.
Right. Right. Okay. So what else, coach? I agree. I 100% yeah. Especially for the young coaches listening, man, that should be part of your interview process. Like, yeah.
It's, and you have to do, I mean, it's the vision that I had with that, but then, you know, having people kind of go along with that. Cause I didn't really start one of that much at the other school. I just kind of let it ride, I guess, a little bit.
Right.
We did it, but we didn't really have a plan, I guess. We need a plan. After that, I would say, you know, you really got to have people that you trust. And that's what's hard, especially I think you get into a new community or something, or you're not maybe there a lot. It's like, who do you really trust? And, you know, who do you have on your side? Because everybody at that time, and it took me a long time to understand this, people want what's best for their kids, but their kids aren't always there for a long time. So that's what's difficult, I think. So you got to find the people that you can really
trust. Say that again, coach, because I think that's a golden nugget for coaches to listen to.
Yeah.
Say that statement about their kids, and then I'll jump
in. Yeah, well, everybody wants what's best for their kids. I mean, I think that's the thing. They do. And so anytime, you know, and that's – I try to have a pretty good communication lines with parents. I let them know ahead of time what my expectations are and what's really going to happen. And probably if they talk to me, your kid may play less because now I'm going to feel pressure to play your kid, and that's not what's best for the team.
Right.
But at the same time, you understand what they're asking is what is – they want what's best for their kid.
Well, they love – here's what I always tell you, especially when I, you know, hire a new freshman coach. I said they love their kids more than anything. That's what – they are tunnel vision when it comes to their kids, and that's great. when you're talking to them, you have to talk. Remember, you're talking to an irrational person. And you can't be rational with an irrational person, because love is a blind thing and they are being irrational because they love their kid. I also tell young coaches that eventually they're going to leave and you're still going to be there.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what coach is getting to is they leave and then they're not coming back to, you know, in a smaller town, maybe they come back, but you know, they don't come back and watch games 10 years after their kid leaves sometimes, but those are far and few between. They're not watching like they were when their kid was playing. So
it's crazy to think of it now, because I just remember at the time how everybody was giving me advice. You're doing this, you need to do this, you need to do this.
Right.
And then, you know, you don't see them for 10, 12 years. Then we all of a sudden have our success and you run into somebody in the grocery store and someone's like, oh, you guys are the best. And it's like, and you don't come back and say, hey, you know, 12 years ago, you said this about me, but you remember it. You do remember it.
Shoot, I remember. I mean, I got the job and it's like, why'd they hire that young guy? they're ready to fire me before I coach my first game. It's like, anyway, yeah. But I think that's an important thing for a young coach is, you know, people you can trust, I think, is that second golden nugget you talked about, Coach.
You know, I mean, I was really, really lucky to have Allison Wilkie and her husband, Matt, and obviously their kids have obviously, you know, are pretty good basketball players too. But just their passion and love for the game. Now, we don't see basketball exactly the same. You know, we have a different somewhat philosophies about game, but we like good basketball. I mean, we really have that. But she always had my back about things, about everything, you know, when we were good and bad. And the times that she's put in, she'd coached a lot of our other teams, but this year's senior class that just graduated, she coached that group. She has another group coming in next year that she coached a lot of time. And her husband did so much for the game of basketball in Beaver Dam. I mean, they're people that have just, they're like going to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame in the state of Wisconsin sometime, just for friends of the game, for what they've done for basketball for this community, because it's been so much.
And how long have your two assistants been around with you?
Well, those people started our youth program from the beginning. Allie started coaching with me. She was already on staff before I got the job and stayed on staff. Then at that point, so she kind of always liked the role. She's an English teacher, and she just always thought that being a varsity coach would probably be too much time,
right?
Paper grading and things like that. But she loves basketball, best skills coach. I mean, she has a lot of time in our practices where she just comes in and loves to do her skill work on both sides of the ball. And you know, I always say, you tell me how much time you need and what we need to work on, and you got it. And so I mean, and that's the kind of where she does. And but this year she just helped us out so much. So she's that. The youth coaches is always hard, because people always, well, what kind of youth coaches you get? Because people, we don't want to get parents, but it's like, well, who else are you really going to get a lot of times? It's not like we're paying these people to coach.
Right.
So you have to find a parent. The hard thing I thought in the beginning is and I didn't know a lot of people when I came in, but you'd get the people that were coaching basketball, but their kid wasn't really into basketball that much. And they were more into getting ready for softball, soccer, you know, whatever other next season was coming on. And I really, as we moved on, tried to find the coach that a lot of times they have a kid who is one of the better players and also have somebody who was really.
How do you pick? This is a good question for youth program things. And we'll circle back to the circle. Do you pick the team? Like, I have myself and my coaches help evaluate the youth kids, and we put them on teams.
Yeah, the nice thing with girls, now boys have been a little bit harder because they get more kids. We tend to have somewhere between that 10 to 16 players on a team.
Okay.
That's kind of what we have. I know other schools, and like when Kimberly would always have like 30 kids and things like that.
Right.
And that gets to be harder. And, you know, a couple of those earlier years, because it seems like when you get somebody new, everybody wants to play that, because it's going to be the new thing. So we used to have a lot of those teams. And the day after we'd split into an A, B team would be one of the longest days of my life, because I'd have every parent on the B team calling me, well, how come, you know, and it was just that. And then all of a sudden you'd get kids quitting, and that B team never ended up being very good. So what we do is we practice, especially at the younger ages, everybody always practices together. Always.
Okay.
And like I said, for girls, it's nice because it's not like 30 kids on a team. I think the most we had on a team this year was 16.
Okay.
A lot of them are like 10 to 12.
Yep.
And then they split off in tournaments. And I kind of tell the coaches, now, third, fourth grade, they split pretty evenly usually when they go to tournaments. Fifth, sixth grade, because they have some of the state stuff they'll do, they'll kind of split in some, but there are some that they'll play the top kids together. Everybody gets to go to state, but it's not going to be equal playing time in that. And then seventh and eighth grade kind of gets to be a little bit more
competitive. Because you don't want to turn them off. Like,
no.
what I've noticed, and you can tell me if this is correct, girls will, and I have a daughter who would rather be on Broadway than pick up a basketball. So that's cool. I mean, I love it. They run for the hills faster than boys do.
Right.
You know, if it's not something fun, they're out of there.
It's social for a lot of those kids.
It is. It is. It really is. It's not, I mean, I always tell people there's more, in Beaver Dam, there's probably street cred for girls that play basketball just because of how successful you've been. But for a young boy all around the country, if you can play in third or fourth grade in the elementary school, you get street cred. Like, you know, you go to recess and you can play, you got cred. I'm not sure it's necessarily always the case. I'm definitely guarantee it is in Beaver Dam. Like,
it's a big deal, and everybody kind of knows now. And we do. I mean, we've got our younger kids stuff that we do. We'll during the winter, we have like Sundays where we have K first, second grade, where our high school kids basically run it.
Right, and that's
awesome. It's fun stuff. It's not like we're, you know, everybody's like, "How come they're not?" It's like, this is supposed to be fun. It's got to be fun. If it's not fun, they're not going to come back.
It's called fundamentals at that age. Fundamentals. Yeah. I agree. So let's talk about your staff some more.
I mean, Allie's been with me at the beginning. We've kind of had some other coaches that have kind of come and gone. From the high school level, our team really changed a lot in 2010 when Dan Hallman agreed to come on to be our top assistant with the high school program. Okay. So Dan was a boys coach, successful boys coach in Beaver Dam. Lost in a sectional final one year to one of those really good Vincent teams when Vincent was in their heyday.
Yep.
So he had done a lot, and he just decided that, you know, he kind of needed to get away and coach some middle school, just some things with some younger kids and that. But he always said, I probably don't really want to be a varsity coach necessarily again, but I really like to be an assistant sometime. And we were on a golf trip together and just started talking, and it's like we kind of have so much of the similar philosophy about things. And we started, what do you do on defense? What do you do in transition? And it was just like, we got two people, and he's probably the most competitive guy I've ever been around, which I really like and felt we needed. And he came in 2010, and I still remember when we had, Dan and I had known each other for 3-4 years. But in our first team meeting at the start of the season, he told the girls, and we realized we had gone from, 4-17, 0-21, 5-16, 11-10, which is better, but it's still not there. He comes in the meeting and says, we better make it to state this year. We're good enough to get to state. We better make it. And it just changed. I just thought it was the right message at the right time. We did make it to state that year, which was crazy. And it was all based on a really good sophomore class, really. But it was just his attitude that we were going to do whatever we can. And he's been with me this whole time. And we just complement each other.
I tell people, I think youth program, for people listening, building a program, I think youth program is big. Like, I might put that one. But if I would put this as 1A, your staff is literally your family.
Absolutely.
And I've had two staffs in 30 year, or in 25 years, two staffs, basically. Yeah. You know, when the staff I have now leaves, I'm done. Like, because the only reason I'm still coaching is because I have a great staff. It is. It's the only reason.
And it's good to have people that, have some of your vision. But at the same time, like I said, Allie's different. It's good to have that. She challenges me a lot, which I don't always appreciate.
But right.
It's good for me. It's good for me that she does that. And Dan does too. Dan challenges. We challenge each other a lot. We're always sending emails back and forth during the day. It's like, did you do this? Did you do this?
I tell coaches, and here's what I think. You need coaches to compliment yourselves, but compliment what you're good at and what you're not good at. Mm-hmm. Like, I have an assistant coach is almost like, a GA. He does all the administrative stuff for me now. I don't do any of it. He does most of my scouting. I'll jump in, in the 20th hour and look over the stuff. I have another coach who's great on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. I have another coach who questions. I mean, it's like I think you need people to compliment you. If you put an exact staff that seems exactly like you, that's not helping.
Not gonna work. No.
Not gonna work.
No.
You don't want yes men. Yeah. Yes, so
those two are just top notch. We had a coach, Corey Franke, who was had been in our youth program all the way through eighth grade. And everybody's like, let's get him in. And he had coached Paige Schumann, who's at Eastern Illinois, and Allie Van Loo, playing out in North Dakota. So a really successful class, a 2019 class for us.
Right.
And so when he was done coaching that group as eighth grade, everybody's like, come coach this team. And I just said, hey, do you want to come up and help up with the high school?
Right.
And he's like, really? And I'm like, well, yeah. Well, I goes, what do you want to do? And he has a full-time job, so the hours are tough. for him sometimes, but he just came in and gave us another positive voice. You know, whatever needed to be done, he would help in, you know. And his, you know, learning was different about the scouting and video preparation and things like that. It was something new for him, but he was really excited. And
I think you caught on something there, yeah, too. Sometimes we get stagnant. I know as a staff, we know mm-hmm. each other so well. So I always bring new people. Like, we'll have a meeting in the next couple weeks. Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. If you want to hear more of these, go over and join teachhoops.com. 14-day free trial allows us to do this, and then subscribe, like, jump up and down, do whatever you got to do. Tell us what you want to hear in the future, steve@teachhoops.com. All right, have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.